Hello everyone and welcome in to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. Youth basketball is often disorganized, focused solely on winning, and generally frustrating. But at Pro Skills Basketball, our mission is to change that culture. We strive to provide a more professional experience for parents, players, and coaches. One focused on organized communication, fun, mutual respect, and personal growth, on and off the court. And the Youth Hoops Pod is a part of that. This podcast covers a wide range of youth basketball topics, from high school and AAU basketball to college recruiting, NCAA, NBA, overseas basketball, mental health and performance, leadership, and much more. Now let's jump into today's conversation. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome back to the Youth Hoops Pod. This is Chris Goodrum, National Director for Pro Skills Basketball. Super excited for tonight's conversation. We've got a good friend of the program, and now after engaging and learning more, I would like to call our guest a good friend of mine because we are both peers in this sport of basketball trying to impact young men, and so excited to jump into the call tonight. We've got Coach Josh Merkel from Randolph-Macon College. He's been 9 years. He's been at Randolph-Macon, 2022 D3 National Champion, 2022 D3 Coach of the Year, five-time ODAC Coach of the Year, six-time regular season champ, four-time ODAC tourney title champions. I mean, he's done it. He's had an amazing run. I think Coach Randolph-Macon, what, 100 and some odd wins and non-losses over the past five seasons, and you know we can count those accolades, but I think you are the type of humble servant and leader that would point to your assistant coaches and the players and the people that have bought into the culture that you've built at your program. So for all of our listeners out there, want to send a warm welcome to Coach Merkel. Thank you for joining us tonight. It's 9 o'clock on the East Coast, so we could be doing better things like 10 toes up in our beds, but we're talking hoops.
Yeah, Chris, great to be on. Thanks for that intro. No matter what time of day it is, it feels good to hear it. At the same time, I'm thinking like, man, how could we have only lost maybe 8 games during that?
Right.
I'm thinking about that extra loss. No, it's great. Like you said, great to be on with you. I know how much you care about the people in your program. We've talked about guys. I mean, this goes back 6 years ago. And even the follow-up you have with guys that have been in your program that are then playing for us, that you stay connected to and know what's going on in their world. I always think that says a lot about guys that are checking in on guys that have moved past and are playing, are older guys playing on.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Coach, let's just talk for the listeners who, you know, if they're under a rock and all they watch is, you know, the D1 national champions and they see this powerhouse UConn against another powerhouse Purdue, which was a great game. Tell the listeners about D3 basketball, because I think D3, D2, even JUCO, community college, NAIA basketball, I think they kind of are left in this big shadow of D1 basketball.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's a lot of places we can go with this. This is, you know, big, general, open-ended. I guess before I lose anybody, what is that I've been on the chase that a lot of, you know, parents and players are on right now. I wanted to play at the highest level. I played at a nationally ranked high school program. We're talking 7th in the country my junior year, 2nd in the country my senior year. A number of my teammates going Division I, high major, Clemson. You know, you can go down the board. Played for a legendary high school coach. Myself, go to a Division III school, Salisbury University in Maryland. Then wanted to coach in high school. I'm a high school coach for 3 years. I get fortunate. I go to West Virginia to be Coach Beilein's GA and then get the job at Eastern Kentucky. And I'm in the Ohio Valley Conference OVC as an assistant for 5 years. And it was a great experience. So I say that I've got 6 years of Division I experience. So I can speak to kind of both levels. But having played Division III and now having been a head coach at this level for 13 years, first, it's not just D1, 2, and 3. Sometimes people just label it 1, 2, and 3. I always say there's like 6 of them. There's like 1A and then maybe 1B, 2A, 2B, 3A, 3B. Let's say there's 6. And teams in that 3A, in other words, high major Division III programs, on any given day may compete with that 1B or a low major. You know, is it a neutral site? Are they coming to us? But you don't see many of those. What I think people see is some Division I's taking, maybe playing the worst Division III that they can. And for somebody that hasn't played Division III, hasn't gone to an open gym against D3 guys, they're just associating, you beat this school by 60, whatever it is, 40. And that's just not realistic. I mean, we can't ourselves get a Division I game. We can't get anybody to play us after playing Richmond 5 years ago. There's just different levels, even in Division III. Then I would say, Chris, it's a great level of basketball. Sometimes you got to actually play with their guys to see, but we're recruiting scholarship level guys that slip through the cracks. I guess we can get into more of the specifics, but I would say some of the top players at our level are guys that were tweeners, maybe didn't have a position, or maybe were 5'10 instead of 6 foot. But guys that are really skilled, that know the game, that can put together a career where they can even play beyond Division III. Like, we've had two guys in the last couple of years that are now playing in Germany, but they were tweeners and had success at our level.
Yeah, so you talked about just about how you go about recruiting, or you kind of started to allude to some of that, and then you talk about tweeners, or you talk about guys that, you know, from a recruitment standpoint, maybe guys that are getting lost on just with the state of recruitment that is now. And hopefully that kind of changes now that the fifth year is about to be over and done with, and maybe we see some getting back to normal. I don't know with the transfer portal, but talk to our listeners about just the type of player that comes through D3 basketball. So when you think, you know, I love the ODAC. So when you think about, you know, the Randolph-Macons, the Roanokes, the Hampton-Sydneys, who had a heck of a run this year in the D3 tournament, like, what are those players like? Because I think that's the misnomer, is what you alluded to, is that they're just not as good as D1 athletes or D2 athletes, or they're just not good. And some of these players are incredible.
Yeah. And again, you know, reminder too, Chris, of like my lens of being, you know, I can't speak for every Division III, because I do think there's just different levels even at our level. And the lens that I'm looking through is, what is that guy that might slip through the cracks? Okay, so let's say, like you said, you just mentioned the ODAC. I would say, number one, physically, there's those measurables. You know, height, weight, physicality, how they move on the floor. Like, I think those things matter. And then the skill level is going to be the next thing. I think there's some guys that need a few years to develop. And some people just, not every freshman can go in and be an impact guy. Hampton-Sydney just had a run that, they had a lot of older guys, and that can certainly make a difference, where guys go to a level where they can have success and develop and make mistakes. Think of like Steph Curry, could have gone high major, especially after year one, but he went to a level where he can make mistakes, have success, and then really crush it. So I think that's the one of the biggest differences, is the height, the weight, the measurables, the athleticism, the strength, the physicality. I've seen some of those Division II, the teams that advance and keep moving forward in Division II. I mean, they're disciplined and they're physical. Those guys are put together. That might be a difference, where we're going to put a team out there that may not look like them. Maybe we got a little more skill at certain positions, but they just might out physical and out athletic, you know, just be more athletic when we play.
So you're sitting down with your coaching staff, right, Coach? And they bring you a list of potential recruits, whether it's unsigned 24s or 2025s or transfers, or, you know, whatever the list is made up of. And they give it to you in a stack where these guys check out these measurables, and here's these guys that check off these measurables. What's the next measurement that you're looking at that's maybe not a measurable of play, but a measurable of character?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely are recruiting for intangibles. And all right, how does that show up, Chris? Because we're going through it right now. Like, we really want to stay away from a low motor guy. from a guy that doesn't move well without the ball or off the ball, from a guy that doesn't compete and run into rebound. I just think that could take a year to get a guy to break habits where he hasn't done that. You know, I'm talking about a guy that should be rebounding. So we're talking about, you know, really threes, fours, fives, maybe twos, certain twos. So motor and how that can show up. Their ability to pass is huge for us. Their ability to cut. So to me, cutting, it's IQ, it's understanding of the game. It's what do they do without the ball? Because five guys on the floor, you know, four out of five times they don't have the ball. Do they know how to, you know, create for themselves if they don't have it? Because chances are they go into a program like ours, they're not going to be the best with the ball like they might have been in high school. And what can they do along the way until they earn that role, maybe that to gain an advantage? All right. I think those intangibles, their competitive fire is a big deal and kind of something that we look for. I do think it's hard to find, I'll say. But do they have the capacity? When we talk to guys, do I feel like I can partner with them where we can build this relationship and help them bring out the best? I just heard Hurley talking about it, but I would say we're very similar in, you know, how does a guy talk about his coach and his program? That's a big deal for us, where we're just kind of looking for those clues to see, you know, how they're going to be with us.
Yeah. So for the listener, I think you should rewind the last 30 seconds and just put it on repeat. Right. So because in my role and in my interactions with players, a lot of what we talk about is don't focus on scoring. At the end of the day, the college coach, any coach, even me as a high school coach, I want to see you impact the game when you're not scoring. How can you help your teammates be great? How can you, you know, find a way to have a positive place on the court and carve out a role? Like, can you buy into whatever the role of the game is asking you to be at one current point in time?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great point. Chris, I'll tell a story. And, you know, I can get going sometimes. Like, if you ask a question and I don't quite answer it, like, keep coming back at me to, like, all right, let's dive in. But let's take one of our current commitments, Ty Showalter, Carolina guy.
Love him. High school. Great kid.
He's a great kid. So if you asked me, like, what is Tyler average? I have no idea. I mean, I know he can score it, but we didn't take him because he's averaging 20 a game. When we look at the film, and by the way, what we want to see from the film is I want to see him against a good defense. Like, I want to see him against a good defensive team that has another college player or two or three. Like, that's what I want to see. If I look at the score and the game and they're winning by 20, I don't want that film. I want to see him being challenged. So that's one thing. And if we say, hey, send us a game against the best competition and it's a team that you beat by 20, that's a red flag right there. They're not playing enough tough teams that don't even have one to send us. But with Ty, it's like, man, that guy, he can shoot, he can score, at three levels. He can shoot over people. He can drive and score. He can drive and kick. He's unselfish. He's got competitive fire. He can rebound. He can block shots. So I'm just watching him as he plays. Then once he commits, I might get the numbers to go over some of that stuff as we build, you know, his development plan. But yeah, I think when parents get caught up in that, even with AAU stuff, numbers, it's not if they're winning in AAU, it's how they're playing, how they're competing to win is the biggest thing for me. You know, one of the best players I've ever coached, Buzz Anthony, is one of the point guards that I talked about that had Division I recruitment, Chris. So maybe this story helps somebody. He went to all the Patriot League elite camps. They all knew who he was, but nobody's pulling the trigger. They want a 6-foot point guard. They want a guy who shoots more. So Buzz and had some Division II offers that he turns down. He chooses us. He wants to coach. We got a coaching tree. Buzz Anthony picks us. Okay. But his competitive fire, Chris, like, it's unlike anything. You know, you think of Kobe, you think of Mamba. That was Buzz developed because he's got a chip. He's a shorter guy. He developed this over time playing in a really good league. And so we're getting a player that had that made him even better over the years. A guy that, by the way, would run into rebound and was so good at it that we said, all right, the two-man is getting back. The three-man is getting back because this 5'10 guy tracks the ball, has a nose for the ball better than anybody on our team. All right, you go rebound. Like, so another thing I might add is, like, does a player have a superpower? You know, we talk about intangibles, but what do they do better than anybody on their team? You know, it could be with PSV, it could be with their high school team, but that can translate. If they're a big time shooter, their best shooter on their team, they might become the best shooter on our team. But we're working to our guys too. Let's say in meetings, like, what do you do better than anyone else? You know, we got 15 guys on the team, 18 guys on the team. Like, they're thinking they could play minutes. Okay, but what do you do better than anybody else? I don't think people ask that enough. But I think when you get to winning teams, high standard teams, a UConn team, Randolph-Macon, like, we need you to have a superpower that can get you on the floor, keep you on the floor, and help us win at a high level.
I love that thought of what's your superpower, buy into it, own it, be great at it. You were talking just a minute ago. First of all, Buzz, incredible. Loved watching him play. Second, Tyler Showalter, I'm going to love watching him play as well. You've got a bulldog and a great family, which cannot be overlooked for the parents that are listening as well. College coaches are paying attention to you on social media, you on the sidelines. They're paying attention. So pay attention. You mentioned a couple minutes ago about it's not necessarily that we're paying attention to how much they're scoring or even if they're winning per se, but are they making the winning play, right? Like, and that's something that we try to hammer home with our players is, hey, we it's not that we don't care about winning, but that's just not our focus. Don't get me wrong. We want to win. There's no competitive bone in our body that doesn't want to win, but we're just focused on what's going to help you become a better player for your next year in high school. And then hopefully, God willing, being able to play at the next level. And that's making winning plays and just so getting kids to buy into that culture. And it's that culture piece that I kind of want to switch over to, because if you listen to any of kind of the podcasts that you've done, or, you know, the conversation that you brought to the PSB Summit this past year, it was more about the influence of the Randolph-Macon culture, which starts with you and it ends with the players buying into it. What are you looking for, or how are you kind of measuring that in your interactions with players, with families, with high school coaches, with AAU coaches? How are you measuring that for a player, and if it translates to Randolph-Macon?
The first thing that comes to mind is, you know, hungry and humble is coming to mind. Do they have a fire? What is their goal, right? Because if you don't have audacious goals, if you don't have big goals, if I want you to be a better player than you want to be, you know, if there's distractions, if there's things pulling you away from becoming great, it's going to be hard for me to put that in you. So do they have that hunger, that drive, that those aspirations? That's going to be big. Then the humble piece, because, all right, that drive is great, but do you know that you can't get there on your own? Let's take an 18-year-old. You know, you've been coaching. We've been coaching longer than they've been alive. Do they have any sense of curiosity? Do they ask good questions? Where are their sources of wisdom and information? Is it just mom and dad? Is it just the high school coach? Are they ready to transition and have another voice become dominant that they can trust and partner with? Because me, I'm going to ask a lot of questions too. Like, I like that Socratic method of, you know, I'm not going to tell you exactly what to do. That, like, that's just gonna, that doesn't work long term. I want you to understand what you should be working. Really, it's about taking ownership, Chris. So I think, you know, that humble, that hungry, but can I find the guys that are going to take ownership for their development? And then that kind of guy, man, when he's coming in every day, we can find the clips. We can show him where these areas of growth, where he can get better. But that humility, it's not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking more of others. Hey, these guys are really good. What can I do to learn from them, put myself in a position, went to competition so I can learn how to close the gaps, right? That whole hero's journey is one way of putting it, or the developmental levels of, like, the, I don't want to lose people here, but, you know, that feeling of you don't know what you don't know. So that's good. You go in there with that blind confidence, but then you get your butt kicked. That's where the humility can come in. And then you're in the pit. How do you get yourself out of the pit? I kind of like people that have had some adversity. Maybe they weren't the best player on their team. I like those guys. Maybe they were the third option, but the other two guys were really good players. That's a slip through the cracks guy sometimes. Those late bloomers, you're just trying to find guys that have those areas of growth, but they're hungry for it.
What is your advice? Like, let's go level by level, right? Because there's so much attention put on all high school age groups. So like a 15U team, which is, your rising sophomores, 16U team is your rising juniors, and then 17U is your rising seniors. What's your advice for those rising sophomores, those 15U kids that just got done playing maybe JV basketball, maybe they sat on a varsity bench, and you're just pressing and stressing yourself. I got to go travel. I got to play the best. I got to get exposure. In your experience, both living it as a basketball player and now as a college coach, what would be your advice to the 15-year-old player?
That's great question. It is important. Become the best player you can be. Forget about the exposure. Become the best player you can be. But now, how do you become the best player you can be? That's very different, Chris. Like, I was super fortunate. I'm at a, nationally ranked high school, which basically is an 11-month-a-year program, which basically we're doing plyometrics and weight training in high school, sophomore year. So Buzz gave good advice for this. He still gives this great advice, Chris. What is your aspiration? You want to be a college player? Let's just say college player. Forget about the levels. You want to be a college player? You want to be the best player you can be? What are those guys doing? They're lifting at least 3 days a week. So you got to ask yourself, a 15-year-old, are you lifting 3 days a week? Are you writing down your numbers? Find out someone that you aspire to be, and what are they doing? Well, they're lifting 3 to 4 days a week. They're eating differently. You got to start to – don't wait until you get to college for a college coach to tell you to do those things. Start to do that right away. I would say we met a sophomore one, and he was eating clean. He wasn't drinking soda. He doesn't eat fries. It's like that guy moved up a notch. How can you start to move up and separate yourself from your friend group? Because you really have to make sacrifices to reach your big goals if you have them. So – be the best player you can be. How do you do that? Study players of the guys that are playing at a level you want to get to. Start to emulate some things that they're doing right now. Maybe that they didn't even do when they were sophomores, but things that they're doing now. Develop a superpower. Is it shooting? Is it handling? Is it making someone better? Is it living in the paint? Is it defense? And in hunting competition. I just don't think you get better. Just by playing games does not make you better. It's the evaluated experience. It's the reflection of it. Even just watching film doesn't make player. I got one guy right now. He'll watch film all day. I love him for it. It doesn't make him better all the time. He's got to watch it with an intense focus. He needs to look for certain things. Maybe take notes on those things. How many times did I allow paint touch? How many times did I get in the paint? So I might be going down a rabbit hole here.
No, that's fantastic. Would you add anything to the 16U, so rising junior, someone who's about to hit upperclassman status, maybe be looked at as a potential leader on a varsity team as an upperclassman, like anything that you would add to that for a rising junior, to prepare not only for high school, but start laying the foundation for something greater?
Well, Chris, everybody... there's a lot of guys, maybe they're the most athletic guy and they get to shoot a lot, maybe a little bit more, they're volume guys. But how do they stand up during shooting drills? I think the NBA does the NBA 100, how many threes can you make out of 100, or how many threes does it take you to make 100? We've got our different shooting challenges, but I would really challenge guys, if they're a shooter, they should be crushing some of those. If they're a handler, they should own some of those ball handling drills in a way that nobody around them can mess with them when it comes to some of those drills. I do think that can translate. But I would say the next thing would be leadership journey's big, Chris. they should be curious. They should ask their, they should be asking their coach, their AAU coach, their high school coach, for feedback, to be really intentional with their workouts and what they're working on, just like a college player would.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Coach.
Do you
advise starting to visit and go to, you know, like the Randolph-Macon summer camps or kind of any of the Northeast camps, just to start seeing a different level, a different perspective, a different region of basketball, getting around coaches, hearing them coach you and talk to you?
Well, I mean, I think so, Chris. Like, I think putting themselves in a position to get honest feedback is huge. So, you know, who is a good friend? See if this translates for some people. Who's a good friend? Someone that cares about you and doesn't care about your feelings. I just know this, like, too many coaches won't give the feedback. They might worry the kid's going to go somewhere else. They might just not want to be. I mean, I think kids need to be really intentional. Like, please be honest with me. I don't care. I won't take it. It's just hard. Even parents, like, you'd be surprised how few parents just say, tell me what you see. I mean, 1 in 100. They might tell you what they see, but I just think very few. In my experience, they just don't do that as much.
Yeah. So then anything that you would add to the rising senior? Just finished my junior year, going into my last year of travel basketball, AAU basketball, preparing for my final senior season. Anything that you would add for a rising senior, whether it's, hey, you should start doing this from a recruitment standpoint, or you should not do this. Like, hey, if a coach reaches out to you, even if it's not the level that you want or think you get, don't ignore them.
Don't ignore them.
Answer them. No. So what are some insights or thoughts for the rising senior?
Yeah, the rising senior. So, I mean, we're going through it now. We're building our list. We're for guys that we like, we're trying to get a high school film. We're clipping it up. We're seeing what's the good and bad. We're inviting some guys to elite camp, which we try to keep small and run it like a practice. I would say, you know, if I'm a, my advice, all right, let's say my, I can't say my son because he might just ask me or ask, but let's say, you know, someone's on your team. Are they asking their coach, what level does he see? And maybe you have the stretch, and then maybe you have, all right, if that stretch didn't work out. And then thinking about, all right, well, let me go see a couple schools at this level to have some perspective. I think I probably didn't do a great job my senior year of going in the either the spring of my junior year or the fall of my senior year to really go see some schools. You know, my thing was I'm just going to work and see where that gets me in this. It was a little bit different way back then. You know, no cell phones back then. You know, you had to drive to that school to really get a feel for it. So things are way different. I mean, you can Google and cross schools off without driving 3, 4, 5 hours. I think you can send intentional emails, Chris. If you don't get a response from a program, like, that's feedback. But I do think players could be a little more intentional on the front end. You know, it's doesn't make you commit to that school by sending an email and say, hey, I'm curious. You guys have a good thing going. We'd like to come up. Is there an opportunity to play? You know, I think you have to earn those things. You have to be good enough. But there's certainly I think players could be a little more proactive with that stuff.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's not the day and age when you were you had a VHS and a VHS and you're playing it and recording it and clipping it up and, you know, mailing VHS tapes.
It's amazing how quickly you can move on this. And I don't know if this is helpful too, but while we're talking about even highlights, like I'm reminded again, like I saw a highlight, man, this kid looks good. We watched the high school film and it's like, you know, he's just not there. Like from the highlight, this is a guy that could help us. Watch him in game. All right, he's not a high major Division III guy. He's more of a low major Division III guy. So, you know, people want to try and put this highlight together. Even if you fool the coach into getting a roster spot, let's say. I don't think you're fooling anybody into an offer, but a roster spot. Eventually it catches up with you. Like, making one play one time, it's like, who are you consistently? That's going to be the most important thing. And players just need to keep working on that. I feel like, you know, we're worried about the image a little bit too much. And did they put together a good 2-minute highlight? Man, it's about way more than that.
So what, ideally speaking, from when you get a highlight, whether it's a 2-minute, hopefully it's not a 5-minute highlight, it's something a little shorter, but when you get a highlight package, right? What do you want to see translate into a longer game package, right? So you see that consistency so that doesn't happen for someone.
Yeah, I mean, you're taking a thin slice. Like within, let's say, the first minute of clips, you're assuming you're seeing them at their best. You know, I mean, there's a difference between the way Steph Curry's ball drops through the hoop for three and maybe another one. So, I mean, even how they're making it, if they're a three-point shooter, how quickly they get it off. Can they get some separation? Are they dynamic with the ball? Are they making just a tough shot over a contest? Okay, like that doesn't, you know, you might not get that shot against a 6'4 defender at our level. I want to see, did they create that separation and then take the right shot? I want to see, can they create an advantage? Like, are they getting in the paint and making a play for somebody else? That would be huge. If it's a point guard, you know, can he just blow by? Does he have blow by speed? Does he take a charge? Is he a hero defender? In other words, like, is he going to make a play for somebody else too?
Right.
Doesn't always show up on a highlight tape, but we're good. If that guy's picking up 94, like, I think there are certain things that coaches do value that players aren't necessarily buying into in high school. Because if they're a big time scorer in their high school, that's not going to be the role. If they can start to be a two-way guy, that can go such a long way.
Yeah. It's funny. You mentioned, are they picking up 94 feet? So at Country Day, that's what Coach Carrier and I do. I mean, we are playing defense for 94 foot. No one wants to do that.
Which is motor too, though. You're helping those guys fight through fatigue, get out of the comfort zone. It's a great thing. Like you don't sit back, make them earn every dribble. You're trying to build their mentality. You're going to get feedback for the guys that fight it. I just think it's a great thing.
Yeah. So you mentioned something, and I know we're running up on time, but you mentioned something that I just love the thought process of, you know, if you're a scorer in high school, that's not necessarily going to translate to you being a scorer in college, right? Like, you're going to have to find and fill other roles and maybe develop the ability to be a two-way player, doing other things, finding your superpower, that sort of thing. What is your advice? Because that's one of the biggest things that I try to have conversations with parents and players about is, hey, you might be the guy now. You're not going to be the guy in college. It's just not. It's not. Maybe your senior year, maybe your junior year, maybe you grow into that. But yes. for the vast majority of high school players going to college, they're going to go and sit on the bench. They're going to go and be practice dummies and grow through practice and just the skill acquisition, the development, and being around that culture and environment and work their way onto the court. And so that's going to be a big shock for a lot of high school players. And so how can high school players now start preparing for that? What can they do, if anything at all?
To me, competitive fire, like literally they have to compete in everything. They have to care about winning. Their care factor, if they have a high enough care factor, Chris, then I feel like even if they score 20, if they give up 22, they'll be burning up for that. And I'm not – it's a hard thing to – look, I'll even take our team right now and pick up. To give a story to bring it to life, all right? Like, you fight for your culture every day. You talk about us having a good culture. Man, we're working at that every day because you got new guys. There's slippage, human nature always happening. I didn't think our guys were competing at the level that we need to. So it was like, hey, fellas, if the team that loses, you run a 22. So it's not, you know, like, I'm not out there watching it. Like, they've got to own that. Can a high school kid take that on? Can he separate himself? Can a high school team say, you know what, if I'm the best player on this team and we lose and pick up, fellas, I want my team running a 22. I think sometimes you might need a coach to share that vision, but maybe me sharing it gets one kid to go take this back to open gym? Because I can tell you, like a Buzz Anthony who had the courage, who was on a leadership journey, like that guy was getting guys in the gym 6 a.m. That guy would get a guy to run a sprint if he lost. That guy would run a sprint himself. Like, so I just think it's something that's trained. It's not like I became that competitor from getting my butt kicked every day in that high school program. And I want that to translate. I want our guys that are in our program to learn from that, because they can carry those winning behaviors over to business and in life and every. So hopefully that answers the question, but there just has to be that burning desire to win at everything they do and not be satisfied with anything less. Like, did they do everything they could to win?
Yeah. I love it. You mentioned Buzz and just running for the sake of running, because they lose, he loses anything. So I coach my son's fifth grade team, and it's fantastic. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it. I thought it was going to be tough. It's been just a respite from high school basketball, elite basketball, all of the stuff that comes with that. And now we talk so much about energy, about, you know, touch and talk, positive interactions, and about being great teammates. And so now it's got to the point that when one team wins in any type of competition, and we do four or five competitions in a 90-minute period just to make it fun and engaging, the winning team jumps on the baseline and runs with them, because they all are great teammates. And like, when that happened about 2 weeks ago, I sat down and I was like, cool, practice is done. You guys can shoot. My job's done. But to see fifth graders grasp the concept of a team's a team and everyone's in it, you know, for the long haul, and we need to be there to lift each other up. Even if we win, we've earned the right to run with the people who didn't win, because that's what a team does. And I just think that speaks volumes. Last thing we normally do, Coach, on the podcast, almost said podcast, a good thick Boston accent, podcast, is we allow, I'm going to give you the floor, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 30 seconds, anything that's kind of on your heart, on your mind, as it relates to the sport, using the sport to open doors, to access anything for young athletes, for parents, whether it's about D3 basketball or just where someone is right now and how they can continue to build the mental fortitude to just push on and continue.
Man, yeah, so good. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, something I was sharing with a family today, is basketball, you shouldn't want your kid to just be happy. You should want them to have a fulfilled life, because we can all be happy having a piece of pizza. We can be happy a lot of ways. It's fleeting. Happiness does not last long. Fulfillment does. How do you reach fulfillment? It's two things. It's meaningful work, and it's deep relationships, or just meaningful relationships. And I think basketball, you know, it's a team game. You're with your brotherhood. You're with mentors. It provides those relationships. Seek out good ones. Be around the average of the average of the five people you're around the most. But basketball can be great for that. There's just great people in the game. There's great coaches in the game. Seek those out that help make you better. And then the meaningful work, like, be consistent, be intense, and be consistent. Be an and player. Put in the work on the court and in the classroom, but just, you know, doing that with consistency, and then seeing where it takes you. Like, for me, maybe one of the best things that didn't happen was I didn't get the Division I scholarship. Well, then it motivated me to just work that much harder, and then I get on a Division I staff. But that striving for the goal was a great thing for me, versus maybe not necessarily getting the goal. That striving for it was big.
Yeah, I love it. So I wrote down a couple of things as you were talking. So one, two, three, four key takeaways, listeners, that I think you should dive into and reflect on. One, find your superpower. Love it. Number two, competitive fire. If you don't have it, that's not your passion. You should find another path. If you cannot create a competitive fire, go find something else to find your competitive fire. Because where your strengths and passions intersect, I think that's where competitive fire lives. I think it's where your joy, where your success and happiness lives. And if you're not there, it's okay. Go find it elsewhere. Be humble and be hungry. I think that's a yes and, you know. And then I love, and you talked about this at the summit last year, but constantly in everything that you do, whether it's in your home, on the court, in the classroom, fighting for your culture every day, because the culture is just not relegated to a court. It's relegated to the people you interact with and just the brand that is you as a human being, as a family entity. And so how are you fighting for your culture to advance it and push it in a positive manner every day? Coach, I wish we lived closer, because I'd come knock on your office door every day of the week. I'd come crash practice. I really appreciate just the support that you've shown us through the years, the support that you've shown any players that we've had come through the Randolph-Macon doors. Shout out Will Coble. And just the voice and champion you are for the game of basketball and for young men and the lives that are impacted by it. Really, really cannot thank you enough for spending some time at 9:43 in the evening tonight.
Yeah, well, Chris, I would throw it back at you, man. Like what you're doing for kids, even putting this podcast, bringing people on, sharing ideas, helping kids in that way. I think this is a huge area for people to grow from. And hopefully kids are listening, parents are listening and taking something. It's not the what they hear, it's can they apply it, right? Can you take it from theory to practice? Hey, I could go another 45, but I appreciate this time too, man. I mean, it flew by. It was a lot of fun talking with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Much love and respect. And to the listeners, I appreciate you guys joining us. Until next time, see you later.
See you. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe so that you can stay tuned to future episodes. Follow us on all of our social media platforms at ProSkills Basketball on Instagram and Facebook, and at ProSkills B-Ball on Twitter. And if you'd like to find out more information about our teams, camps, clinics, or virtual basketball, check out our website at www.proskillsbasketball.com. We'll see you soon on another conversation.